The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga, and I promise not to speed by this morning, because we do have a Saratoga All-Star, and she's one of our favorite guests, and Sue Beebe from the Cornell Cooperative Extension of Saratoga County, and she is, they keep adding titles to her, the Assistant Director slash Agricultural Issue Leader of the Extension. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning, Rick.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
It's fun to have you here today.
Considering it's a crisp fall day out there today.
I don't even want to talk about it. I'm not ready for it. I love fall. I love our change of seasons. But I hate to see when one season ends, except for winter. And, you know, I love the spring. I love the summer. And I love fall. And I can take winter up till Christmas. And then if it kind of went back to spring, and
it would be okay.
3 months, it'd be okay with me. You know, but that's about how much I do in the wintertime is at Christmas. So we got a lot to talk about this morning, as we always do, and we never seem to finish. I have a couple guests that we never seem to finish what we want to talk about. And I get you back on one time a season because you're so busy, you can't be on any more than that. But, I mean, it's so much going on with agriculture and lawns and shrubs and flowers and the whole works that you need more than an hour. But we're into the fall time of the year, I guess. We'll still get warm weather.
Right.
I mean, that's a gimme. I think a lot of people right now are happy that they don't have to mow every week. Unless you have a lawn like mine, which is 90% crabgrass, and then you have to mow every other day because, I can't put pesticides down.
Yep.
Peg won't let me because of the dog. And it looks green anyway.
That's exactly right. There's a lot of green out there that, you know, you can tolerate and still, you know,
oh, definitely.
Go for, so.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know when, and I don't know if you know this, but when it got to be where lawns had to be manicured.
Yeah, I really don't know. Yeah, no. It was because just a lot of people just really wanted them to look similar to, you know, these well-maintained estates that, you know, have gardeners who can do multiple things. And, you know, it was that, you know, keep up with the Joneses type deal. And it,
I guess.
And it's, you know, and it is actually starting to wane away from that. People aren't as concerned with that same kind of look as they once were. But we've had a very difficult growing season for lawns this year.
Oh, most definitely. It was so hot and dry. Yeah. For so long, I mean, people don't get nervous, I think, when you get warm weather and, you know, little rain, the lawns go dormant.
Right.
And people think, oh my gosh, I got to add a ton more fertilizer. And that's not good, is it?
No, it's not. You know, and we have seen a lot of that this year, but we've also seen a lot of, just due to the humid conditions that we've had, the fluctuation in the temperatures that we've been dealing with for, you know, months. It's not, you know, recent events, but recent events are even complicating it worse. We really have seen a lot more disease that we haven't seen other years.
Okay.
And so we are seeing, you know, lawns that people thought were going into a dormant stage that really were heavily diseased.
Oh.
And so we do have some lawns that are not going to make a comeback.
Wow.
And we do have some overseeding that should be done. And we're in the end of our window of overseeding right now for fall.
Oh, we are.
Yeah, no, we're not, you know, we, yeah. October 10th is probably like my cutoff absolute last date.
Okay.
To really kind of overseed. And that might be pushing it if our weather conditions really chill down. But I'm not seeing a lot of our nights really chilling right now. I think we're staying still above that 38 degrees. And as long as we're above that 38 degrees, we still have enough time for seed to germinate, establish a good root system, probably not give us a lot of top growth.
Right.
Yeah, no. And that's what people have to realize. It doesn't mean, you know, if you're just seeing these, you know, fine little growth at the top, it's not that your seed is bad. You know, you're developing a good root system, and come spring, that's going to be taking off and doing just fine. So, you know, I think we need to also pay a little bit more attention to the fact that, you know, it might not be the same kind of growth that you might have anticipated had you been doing overseeding more in the spring of the year, which really is not the best time.
No, I think, I mean, as far as when I was in business years ago, I always found the best time was early summer when it would get a little humid at night, and it seemed like the grass took off. You know, you watered it, but at night, too, it stayed humid and it got a lot of moisture. And I don't know. That's when I found the best time was for me.
Yeah, you know, it really kind of runs into different cycles. If you get out early in the spring, as soon as your ground temperatures reach about 55 degrees, you can seed then, and you're going to get a pretty rapid take on the seed. If you wait until your soil temperatures reach more of that 60-plus degrees, which is what we tell you to do to really fertilize, you're probably going to have a much slower take on the seed. Okay. So you can seed before you fertilize in the spring and have a better take on it. Or, like you say, you can wait a little longer till you have the temperature fluctuations that really allow that, you know, humidity to be up there so that you can get some of that, you know, extra moisture into it, and then it's okay.
Right.
And then you're looking at, you know, depending upon the year, maybe mid-August, but usually I would say about the 1st of September is about another great time of doing it. And at that time, we usually are running into some of those nice intermittent rains.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily like the ones we've had this year that have been pretty heavy downpours.
Oh, this week,
but some, you know, nicer intermittent rains. But even those heavy downpours, as long as we get the seed down right, it's not going to wash it away unless we're on total bare ground.
Right. I was going to say, you know, probably up north, it is getting below the 39. But I think here we've been the lowest, I think we've been the last couple nights has been like 41, 42.
Yeah, so. I don't know. You know, I really had, yesterday I did not go out to our training center on the day before. But the day before that, I was out to our training center and all of my crops looked great. Yesterday when I went out to move a couple of plants around, anticipating that last night might drop a little cooler.
Right.
The peppers have already were hit. So
really?
We definitely did have temperatures under 38 degrees in Ballston Spa on Thursday night.
Okay.
So, you know, and last night, I don't know, it was pretty chilly. I'm not really sure where we really ended up.
But I get up at 4 for work, and I always check the temperature, and it was hovering around 40, 41. Now, that's at my house, so
yeah.
It's different.
And you're in a pretty isolated spot, though, too.
That
so that makes it
good.
Really,
cave,
you know,
that
makes it pretty nice there,
yeah,
you know. So
about grass seed, I wanted to ask you, this time of the year, you want to get a root system established. Is it okay to put, I mean, I think the fastest growing grass, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, is the annual.
We don't want to grow any annual grasses.
No. A rye. But that wouldn't that get
perennial the, rye.
Okay, well, does that grow as fast as the annual?
Yes, it does, actually.
Okay,
it germinates just as fast.
All right, because I was going to say, that's a fast-growing grass seed, and you can get a root base established. Then in the spring, you can do the whatever, the good grass seed.
Yeah, but your perennial rye roots just as rapidly as your annual rye does, to be very honest. So I would not try to do anything with an annual grass.
Okay.
I would definitely just go with the perennial rye.
Right.
The perennial rye, within days, you're going to have a root system developed, and within probably 10 days, we're going to see a fairly decent growth on the top even.
Okay.
So, you know, it's really going to take off very rapidly for you, you know. But, you know, and if you're going with with, you know, if you have a situation where you really need that filled in right away, you know, make sure that the blends of rye you get have a lot of different cultivars in them. So you want, you really should have at least three cultivars. So you want to read that seed bag and look to see what, you know, you're not going to know what the variety names are, but make sure there's at least three different names. Because
like,
the reason is if we don't do that and we have a really bad winter and it kills off a variety, it could kill off the entire lawn once again that you just put the effort into starting. Sure. And then you could come in the spring and overseed with your more desirables that you want, you know, to add into there.
Now, are we talking like maybe fescue? Is it, would that be one?
Well, that's a different species. What I want you to do is
so
just.
So what are we talking, like perennial rye?
We're talking perennial rye, which comes in different, you know, types of cultivar names. You know, like, you know, midnight, you know, and, you know.
Okay.
All of those kinds of things. Just make sure you have three different cultivars in there.
Okay, all right.
So that, you know, so that you don't have one grass type.
Sure.
You know, and you can go out and you can pick up a bag of perennial rye that's just really going to be one grass type. That's not what you want if you're doing a lawn.
Right.
That's okay for certain situations. You're trying to do something for a conservation cover, but you're going to come in later with something else. You know, that's the usage for something like that, but not for the lawn. The lawn, you want to make sure you have at least three different cultivars in that mix so that you don't have a dieback. The problem with perennial rye is a bunch type grass. So it only grows in clumps.
Oh, no.
Okay? It doesn't spread ever. You know, and that is the reason that we very often will see these little pockets because what cultivar dies off, and it's a particular cultivar that's not hardy for that winter condition, and now you have these little pockets in your lawn. You know, so if you're using 100%, you know, perennial rye, that might happen. I really would prefer that you use, you know, a nice mix of species so that you do have a mix that includes fescues and, you know, Kentucky bluegrass along with the perennial rye so you don't run into that problem. But the problem with a later seeding, like an October seeding, is that Kentucky bluegrass is going only going to develop a tiny root system, and it's not going to show you any top growth because it will take 6 week minimum to see growth on the top.
And here, you know, around these parts, instead of Kentucky, we say Kentucky.
Yeah.
All right, so, one of the things too is, you know, I've been up to the cemetery a lot more lately, and it's terrible. A lot of sand, and I mean, it's just these weeds with the little flower and the vine, and I'd like to get some grass established up there. What can I do? First of all, I'll probably have to scrape off the weeds and stuff. But what can I do in sand? Is there anything I can do other than mix topsoil with it and work it in?
Just put a light coating of compost over, you know, just a very thin coating, and let it, you know, let nature work it in, you know.
So
you know,
put the grass seed down first.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you know, and it'll work. It'll all take hold just fine.
Okay.
You know, and once that root gets established on that sand, you're fine. It's just that initial establishment. Our sands really are not typically bad. And most of our sands for most of our area do not have super low pHs, you know. So we really typically have, you know, a good setting for the grasses to take hold. We just need to have that extra little bit of moisture retention in order for it to really, you know, start up.
Could I do it now before it got too cold? Okay,
yeah.
I think I'll do that because then in the spring you can go in and, you know, get it up a little better. But it's terrible when you go in a lot of old cemeteries. And, you know, I mean, they don't really look nice, the grounds.
Yep.
They try. It's a lot of weeds, but they try. And they're not going to oversee
Well, you know, there's actually an awful lot of work to cemetery maintenance.
Oh, there
is.
Yeah. Oh, tell me about it, especially big ones.
There's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I give the guys a lot of credit because, you know, they have to be pretty much mowing every day. But there's things, you know, and people don't realize that. I know our Kiwanis Club, we go into cemeteries that don't have maintenance. or either ones that do. And you can't get too close to the stone because if you scrape it, you could ruin it late for later on years.
Right.
So we go in and trim it by hand. And so we'll go in and clean up cemeteries that don't have perpetual maintenance and clean it up and trim and mow and stuff. But that's good. I want to try and do that. When you put a lawn in, what should you use to cover it? I know people put straw down, but is that the right thing to cover the grass seed and fertilizer with if you're putting a lot of topsoil on? You're trying to reestablish a lawn, let's say, an area.
Okay, so if you're trying to reestablish an area, your biggest thing for grasses to really grow is to make sure you have good seed-soil contact. The covering is not necessarily as important. You know, certain times of year, if we're seeding now, you're not going to have wildlife trying to go after the seed like it does in the spring. You know, so is it really essential to put a cover down? Not necessarily. And especially with the kind of weather conditions we're having now, where we're not heating up extremely hot in the day, we are maintaining a fairly cool enough soil that, you know, we've got, you know, good moisture retention within that soil surface. And it's not really necessary for us to really put something down on top. What happens to us is when we cover our seed is we have a tendency to cover our seed too heavy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no. And when we cover our seed too heavy, we actually smother a lot of that growth. And then instead of allowing it to just naturally decay, you have to come in and do some raking to get rid of that straw. And if you do that, you're pulling up some of your seed.
Well, not only that, I've seen people put an layer of peat moss over it.
And that is like the worst thing to do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it keeps things moist. But, I mean, it's going to pack down.
It really does not keep things moist.
Oh, no?
No, because peat moss is actually, if it's allowed to dry, unless you keep the peat moss moist, unless you're constantly keeping water on it, if it dries out, water is going to run off of it, not seep into it.
I mean, it gets hard.
Yeah, no. Well, it's not necessarily that it gets hard, but it's really kind of impervious surface, you know? It's just a big runoff surface. Peat moss should not be used to cover anything. Other types of, compost, humus-based type composts would be the thing if you're trying to put a little layer of something over it. Use just a tiny layer of compost over it. But definitely stay away from the peat moss. Peat moss is really not a... Peat moss can be beneficial to incorporate into vegetable gardens and things like that because vegetable gardens like a more acidic soil anyway, and peat moss is acidic.
All right.
But, you know, lawns actually like it, you know, closer to neutral. They like a more alkaline soil. So, you know, peat moss really isn't a lawn favorite. Peat moss is great for vegetable gardens, but for lawns, you should really look at other types of compost.
And that brings up a point. Don't over alkaline your lawn with lime.
No.
Take samples from around your yard, put each sample in a baggie, and take it down to where? Can you take that?
You can bring it to our office at 50 West High Street in Ballston Spa. And we have a drop box outside of our office, so you can drop off samples 24/7, 365 days a year if you needed to. You know, I want to see you go out and dig that soil sometimes in those, you know, peak,
20 below zero
January days. But,
minimal.
You know, it's $1 for a pH test. So it's very, very easy to do. And definitely invest that $1 and find out what your pH is before you buy that lime. Don't believe them at the garden center. Lime is not a cure-all. It will not take care of the problems that you have. You really need to make sure that you've got proper soil pHs in order to try to avoid a lot of problems with insects and diseases and other things. And the problem is when you get that pH too high, and we tested soil at the office the other day, and I had a master gardener who was in who hasn't been in a while, and she was like, I'm doing something wrong with my soil testing. And I'm like, why? And she says, you got to come back and look at these for me. She had 5 soil samples. 3 of them were about 7-8, and 2 of them were like 8-4. And she's like, really? And I'm like, well, yes. And then The problem that you have when you reach that type of a scenario is that you need to add sulfur to drop that pH, and lime, within a year's time, will bring your pH up.
Oh, that'll bring it back up again.
You know, sulfur will take years to drop. So what you do by adding lime, we could take a soil, you know, with a pH of 7, decide that we have a problem out there, and the garden center says, you know, buy lime, it cures everything. And people will buy it, put it down, and then that's why their pHs get up into these zones of 8.4.
Right.
We only have a few lime belts in the county, and even with the lime belts, the natural pH does not go above 8. So we know that the person has added something to their soil to get it up to that 8.4. But to drop it back down, sulfur reacts with the bacteria in the soil. So it needs warm soil temperatures to work.
Okay.
You know, and so it does not work at all over winter because you don't have warm enough soil temperatures for it to work. So you can only really put it down when you've got warm enough soils and it can work with the soil bacteria to make that drop in pH. So you have a very small window of the growing season. You can't apply a lot of sulfur at once to your existing grasses because it could volatilize if the conditions are right and burn the grass.
Right.
So you have to do it in small quantities. So you have to put down no more than 5 pounds per 1,000 square feet at a time. And when you have a pH of 8.4, in order to even think about bringing it down, you're looking at 25 pounds of sulfur, which can only be applied at 5 pounds at a time.
Right.
So you're looking at 5 applications. To get there.
What is good pH? 7?
6.8 would be optimum, you know, but, you know, 6.8 to 7.2.
Okay.
That would really be your range of, you know, things should be growing really, really well for you.
Right.
Under 6.2, you have some issues. And once we get over 7.5, we have major issues.
All right.
And so this person's lawn was in really serious shape. And with a pH of everything being basically at 8 to 8.5, it is going to be difficult to bring that lawn back into shape.
And when you get the sample, how far down should you get the dirt?
For lawns, your sample wants to be taken at about a 3-inch depth. Yeah, no.
Okay.
You need to be at that midpoint range of where your grasses should be rooting. You know, and I'm going to say that, you know, and I have to say should be, because I've seen lawns that the grasses have not even gotten to 3 inches because of the way that people are maintaining them.
Well, they mow too low, correct?
You know, they mow too low and they water too often.
Yeah.
You know, and when you do that and you only have moisture in the top inch of soil, you're only going to have roots in the top inch
right.
of soil.
And then don't water for a while and you're going to have big problems. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it's crazy. But also, I think there should be a warning on what you just said, that if you put sulfur on your lawn, if you smoke, don't go out in the backyard and smoke.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you'll have a grass fire.
Yeah.
I'm only kidding on that one, I guess. All right, so we're coming into the fall.
Yep.
And we want to prepare our lawn for the spring. So people tend maybe to over-fertilize or add crazy things and say, oh, come spring, everything's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
So what should we do?
Or fertilize too late. We really are, you know, for our area and a lot of the research that has been done in the more recent years, we have found that you don't want to be fertilizing too late. We used to do a lot of late fall feeds.
Right.
You know, and that would be like, you know, the root system will absorb the nutrients. It'll be great for the spring, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And what we have found is the later that nitrogen goes down, the more likely you are to develop diseases over the wintertime. So we don't really encourage late fall fertilizations. So your last fertilization should be probably about October 15th at the absolute latest.
Okay.
So you don't have a lot of time left,
right.
You know, in order to get that fertilization, you know, down at this point. You know, so, you know, if you're looking to thicken the lawn a little bit, now's a good time to be doing a little bit of that overseed, you know, that we were just talking about. You know, lightly rake things first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's really kind of where your catch is. Because if you can lightly rake so that those little tiny bare spots that you have has a little bit of loose soil on top of it, yep. when that seed hits, it's going to have a better chance of really combining in and doing something. If you just throw it over on top, unless we have harsh rains that come and help pelt it into the soil, it's not going to make good seed-soil contact.
So really, you now's know. A good time so because of leaves on it.
It's a great time because yeah. you don't have a lot of leaves. It's a great time to just go out, do a nice light rake onto it, throw down a little bit of seed, and go for it. You know, and you know, and if you haven't done a fertilization in the early September, you can still do a fertilization now. You know, so now's a good time to be taking a look at, you know, that aspect of things just to bring things back into shape so that come spring, things are going to be growing nicely. And our big push that usually ends up happening is everybody gets out there and fertilizes very early in the spring. And I know the reason why, and it's because you're putting down preventative crabgrass controls, and the easiest way to do it is in a weed and feed. And the problem is we're feeding our lawns way too early.
And you can buy crabgrass preventive by itself.
Yes, you can. And that's what you really should be doing because you should not be fertilizing until our soil temperatures really start to reach that point of good grass growth. Because when you put it down early, you're encouraging the grass to grow. You're actually starting the system. And that just makes the grass actually start to decline its root system faster. And then we start running into earlier spring problems.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of things we can do if we just think about doing them in a little less quantity than what, you know, people really typically will come around to doing. Well, and then right now is the time to start thinking. We're getting close to that frost date. If you've got ground ivy, this is the best time of year. Number one, it's the best time of year to get rid of your weeds.
Oh, it is.
You know, this is the best time for weed control All right. because your weeds are looking to pull in the nutrients, and so they're really thriving on whatever you put down. So you can use all kinds of different weed killers out there. You know, it doesn't make difference what herbicide you're using. It is the best time to use it. But if you've got ground ivy, that's where you have to be a little bit more particular. You do need to get the right product, and you need to wait until after the first frost in order to apply it.
What about crabgrass?
Yeah, no. Well, crabgrass is an annual grass. Why bother killing it?
True.
It's just going to die on its own.
Yeah, true.
Okay. Just let it die.
All right, let it die.
You know, what you want to do around a crabgrass area is go out, rake with a metal rake.
Right.
So that you're loosening that soil. Seed right over top of that crabgrass. The crabgrass works as your mulch. When it's dead, it's gone, and your new grasses take over.
Take over. If you mow 3 inches...
You know,
high so that the roots can establish. So this is, yeah, I know. See, you know what?
You got it, Rick.
You can't, well, you know, you can't impress upon people the importance of using the Cooperative Extension as information center because you can get such good information about what to do, you calling the extension, rather than going by yourself or Googling what to do online, which is they're only going to sell product.
Well, if you Google online, make sure you go to an EDU site. You know,
yeah.
if you you can Google up something and then just put right after it site, you know, EDU,
yeah.
and then it'll pull up ED, you know, it'll pull up. That what that's going to really bring you is to extension sites, basically. It's going to be land-grant universities. But then also make sure that that land-grant university that you're reading about is close enough to your climatic conditions.
Yeah.
You know, that you're looking at something that's like Mississippi, Vermont, Massachusetts, New York, that you're not looking at North Carolina, you know, Texas A&M.
You know those two.
California.
In all honesty, you can dial 518-885-8995. Easy. It's in Boston Spa.
Yes, you can.
Go on Saratoga at cornell.edu. It's local.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to get the information for our area and information if you have a question about your lawn, your shrubs, your flowers, your gardens, whatever. I mean, you're right here.
Yeah.
And why not take advantage of it? I don't think enough people know that, though. They don't really think about, you know, they'll ask the guy at the garden center.
It's just like if you're buying plant materials, you know, you want your plant materials that you're getting. You would like things that are grown more locally, that are more adapted to our local conditions, right. You know, rather than mail ordering from, you know, California something in and then saying that, well, you know, it said it would grow in zone 4. Well, yeah, it might if you, you know, really were having the right kind of stuff, you know. So, it's, you know, the more local that you can get with any of that, the better off you are. Yep. But if you are out there hunting for something, just make sure you're hunting a site that's not just, you know, Bob's Garden.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, Bob's Garden is not going to give you really the information that's really accurate.
And Bob's Garden may be getting his stuff from South Carolina.
And I have no idea if there's really a Bob's Garden site or not. But, you know, I'm just...
anything bad about Bob. It's just, you know, because now we're bobbing for apples. So, what the heck?
That's right.
I want to get a little bit more into lawn insects. And it seems like, we'll get into that when we get to shrubs and trees, but lawn insects that we're looking for and how to control them.
Yeah, right now what you're going to be seeing is you're going to be seeing the potential of grub populations and sod webworms. That's what's going to really be out there right now in higher numbers. You may still have some chinch bug out there. And the difference between a chinch bug damage and a grub damage is grubs, if you try to grab on the grass that looks dead and it just like sloughs right off the soil, that means the root system is gone and it's grub damage. If you hold on to the grass and it's holding tight in the soil, that's very likely chinch bug or sod webworm damage.
Okay. Oh, what can we put down?
Yeah, no.
So
we do have controls that we can still utilize to treat all of those. So, you know, there are products that are out there in the marketplace, very easily found, you know, and they typically have, like they'll say, 24-hour control on them.
Yeah.
You know, those are the ones that are going to do the job for you now.
Can you water
Don't
them
go
right
out
away?
And get a season-long product. Because those season-long products, which are still on the store shelves, are not going to work for you.
Okay. Can you water them in as soon as you put it down, or do you?
For most of them, yes.
Okay. Do you have any kind of a product name? Without.
Well, no, I really don't do product names.
Well, can you give us like a chemical in it that? Because I'm looking for what to buy. I have no clue what to buy.
Yeah, no. There's a lot of, your key is looking for that 24-hour. That's your key.
And you can water it right now.
Yep. You know, that's your key. And that's what you're looking for. You know, and because those are going to be the chemicals that are going to work.
Okay, cool.
You know, because there's so many different alternatives out there, you know, that you do have. And, you know, you really just kind of need to look at the bags, read directions, and determine what's best for your site.
Well, yeah.
Some things are going to be much safer. You know, I mean, if you've got pets, you want a pet-friendly product.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to the bags will tell you.
All right.
You've got to read your product, and that's the key.
I was going to say, if you can't say the name, why don't you spell it out?
I don't think
that's going to work either. But,
no.
All right, so it'll say pet-friendly.
Yeah, no, it'll tell you that, and that's going to be your key, is that you've really got to be looking. They actually do, as long as you're, and this is the key, you need to read that label.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, off the air you're going to tell me, because
reading that label is extremely important. Yeah. You know, not only, Liz, the label, the law.
Yeah.
You don't want to be putting down more than it says right. because that could be a problem.
Okay.
You know, you want to use it correctly. You know, number one, you know, you want to apply it as it tells you to apply it, okay. you know, in order for it to really work for you. You know how that saying always is less is more?
Yeah.
You know?
That's well, the name of it?
Okay,
less is more?
No. No.
Okay.
But the key here is, you know, when you're looking at any kind of pesticide, putting it down at the rate it says to use it at is going to give you the control. Putting it down at a higher rate
right.
very often is not going to control the situation for you. And you're going to just end up with a lot of extra runoff and a lot of extra dollars being spent.
Sure. Now, do they have the grub and chinch bug together, or do you buy them two separate?
No, it's the same product.
Oh, it's the same product.
Same okay. product.
Because I remember when I was in, we used to put grub down instead mm-hmm. of,
you know. Yeah, you know, and that's why I say, you know, and that's the problem that you have right now is that, you know, store shelves still have season-long control products sitting on them. But those products can only be used earlier in the season because it takes the key to those products is they're not instant control. They have to work within the soil chemistry to be active. You're not going to have that now.
Right.
You know, you don't have time. We don't have a month for a product to take and become effective. Because if we wait a month, now our insect population is going to be into their, like, fourth instar or third instar. They're going to be really large, and we don't have any product in the market that's going to kill a really large insect.
No.
You have to get them in that really young stage. And so you don't want a season-long thing. You want something that says this is going to work right away
mm-hmm.
because well, that's what you
want. Right away. Anything for moles? Because I know they can be a problem in the spring, but...
Sadly, there's nothing tried and true for moles.
No.
There really isn't.
Hammer and a screwdriver if you find the end of the run. But
there's nothing tried and true. Everything that's out there in the marketplace really kind of just sends them someplace else. It's very temporary, and they'll be right back.
They'll be back.
So except for a mole trap. It's the only way. A spear trap in the tunnel. It's the only way to really kill a mole.
Spear trap?
And nobody really likes that. Spear.
No, well, okay. What's that?
I said it's a spear trap.
Spear. I thought you said beer
no,
trap. And
spear.
I was going to say, they're having trouble with beer now. They can't get the, I just heard this, it's the truth. They can't get the carbon dioxide for the bubbles.
Yeah, that's been around for a while. We've been having a shortage.
And they're having like a big problem now. So they're thinking about switching to nitrogen. And they're saying that it's killing the microbrewers, the small ones, because they're selling it to the big guys. Like, I'm going to spell it backwards so I don't say it. Dub.
And
Rollum and all the other ones. So we may see, unfortunately, a lot of the small ones not be able to make it. But anyway, that's a supply chain issue. Okay, so insects, you can still have a little time.
Have a little time, not much.
Not much.
So you really need to be doing that right away.
All right. One of the things that are dessert, I think, for moles or whatever, and it's a time to plant them right now, are bulbs, correct?
Yes.
And
it's actually not for moles. That's for voles.
Voles, okay.
You have to, moles eat insects.
All right.
Voles eat root system plant parts.
Okay. Now, is a vole like the foreign cousin to the mole?
Yeah. No. A vole is like similar to a meadow mouse.
Okay. All right. And so, but let's get back to the bulbs. It's the time to plant them now.
It is.
Right? And you can find them in any garden center, even now in some food stores.
Yes.
They sell them.
Yes.
And so, I mean, you know what's nice is when people plant them in a pattern,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that's nicer than just planting them in a row.
Well, at least clusters are good, you know, something that's going to make it showy, you know, so if, you know, rather than putting something in a row, you should always just kind of cluster something so you can have a big grouping. You know, patterns are really great, but even in a pattern, you really should be clustering more.
Well, you should, but I'm thinking, you know, you could start out with the crocus, and then, you know, plant some other bulbs in a circle around that, and then, because the crocus comes out early.
Yes.
But then you got your tulips and hyacinths and daffodils. They come up around the same time, correct? So, I don't know.
Close. Daffodils are going to come on before the tulips are going to come on.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
so,
that's why the tulip
so you have, you get
later.
You get like your snowdrifts early and your crocus early,
yeah.
You know, and then you're going to come into your daffodils and your grape hyacinths. And then your, you know, hyacinths and tulips are really, you know, at that latter part.
And they should be planted how far down?
Well, it really does vary with which one of those bulbs we're talking about as far as how far down they really
okay.
go.
All right.
You know, crocus and grape hyacinths and snowdrifts are really small bulbs.
Yep.
You know, they're going to have a much, you know, shorter depth that they're going to be planted at. So there's a lot of things that you can do where you can layer with bulbs. Yeah, no, so that you can have things kind of growing within that same area, but you could layer them in so that, you know, they'll start to cover some of the foliage when other things are dying out, like your snowdrifts and your crocus. You know, you can hide a lot of that foliage with the other, you know, flowers coming in. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do. But, you know, depending upon the size of the bulb, it's going to depend on whether you're looking at, you know, 2 inches or 6 inches in depth. And it depends upon your soil type as well. Because in a sandier soil, you have a tendency to plant a little bit deeper than you will in a heavier soil. My husband was really great with that one. You know, he will tell you he is not the green thumb person, you know. And he would always help. He would help me plant bulbs, you know, and we'd be on a sandy soil in Saratoga and we'd be planting our bulbs and we'd be going really, really deep with them. And his parents were in downtown Schenectady and they were on a clay soil. And he decided one time that he was going to make this great garden for his mom. And he went and planted, and I wasn't with him when he was planting all of these bulbs. And he planted at the same kind of depth in mom's garden as he did in our house. And our bulbs were coming up looking great. And he's like asking his mom, this garden was visible from her chair, you know, what are you seeing anything out there? And she's like, no. You know, and we would always go and we would replant that garden into annuals and the, you know, and whatever. He planted those hyacinths just as deep in that clay soil as we would at my house. The hyacinths, when we were digging up the garden to put in the annuals, were blooming underground.
Oh, my nudge.
Because he had them so deep.
Yeah.
You know, so you do have to be careful what your soil is.
Sure.
You know, as far as what it is you're looking at, too. So, you know, you need to know your soil, and you need to know what the bulb size is.
And most of the time when you buy your bulbs, you get them out of a big box, you know, and you pick how many. And it'll tell you on the box how far down you go. So it's not like, oh, my gosh, what do I
do? You know, because the larger bulbs are going to be planted deeper. You're going to be 4 to 6 inches, you know, on something like a daffodil, depending upon your soil type. You know, so it's really going to make a difference as to what you got.
Now, do you, in the spring after they flower, do you dig the bulbs up or do you leave them there?
Your best bet is to leave them. Your best bet is to wait until the greens start to yellow.
Okay.
You know, so allow them to, they don't have to fully yellow, but make sure that the tips at least start to yellow before you cut the greens back. That way you know that you've gotten enough storage back into it and it'll be good for next season.
Okay. Cut them ground level?
Yeah. Just, you know, cut them right down.
Okay. Well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to talk. My wife has a beautiful perennial garden. I mean, the whole length of the backyard, pretty much. And she's got different things, so there's always some color in it. And I think maybe planting some bulbs for the spring would be nice, you know, but we'll see.
Yeah, my you know, while all of them are really nice, tulips are the ones that is the most favorite for wildlife. So tulips are the hardest ones to actually grow and to keep from year to year because tulips have a tendency to get munched on. So if you put them in, they may grow great the first year, but you may not really get them coming up, in a subsequent year,
yeah.
because very often they will get munched on.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, well, no. Things that don't get munched on are like grape hyacinths, snowdrifts, and daffodils. Those are the three that really wildlife does not seem to like. So it gives you some alternatives.
Yeah, it does. It does. And if you want tulips, you can just plant them every year.
Yeah.
Put a couple more in around.
Yep.
All right. Pruning shrubs. I know evergreens have two growths on them, and we should probably do the trimming like in early summer, and then again now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And that's not going to hurt them. Anything else we should prune back?
You just really want to be looking at your plant material now. And if you've got anything that looks like it was diseased or you've got broken branches, make sure you get that off before winter. Because, the winter conditions, snow laden on a branch that already is a problem is going to cause even a more extensive break. So get rid of it when you don't have a potential problem where it's going to tear in there. So get rid of that. Most of our other plant materials, we really don't really want to be doing a lot of pruning on now. It really is more of those at those evergreen families that we can really do our trimming and be doing really well for. And the reason is if our temperatures really drop rapidly, that's not going to be an issue. If the temperatures drop rapid, then the plants are going to survive well if you prune them now. But if our temperatures don't drop rapidly and we end up getting a surge of Indian summer, you're going to have a potential of getting some growth that's going to trigger, and then we're going to have a problem with winter hardiness.
And we usually do get Indian summer.
We usually do. So that's why we really would like to kind of hold off on most of the others. So it's really just the evergreens that are really the big ones for right now.
I think we're going to have to change that name pretty soon, though. I don't think Indian summer is going to hold up too much.
Well, yeah, you're right.
I'm going to have to, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to have to do, but it's awesome. Anyway.
I'm not really sure what that was.
I know.
I didn't think of that one.
See, well, in this woke generation where now the.
I mean, we did change, to spongy moths. So
I know.
I'm not really sure.
Gypsies are mad, though. Let me tell you that. They are devastated. But with the Coast Guard, the Air Force now saying you can't say mother or father, Indian summer, I don't know. Anyway, Indigenous people summer. That's probably what we'll do. Anyway, all right, so cut back. How about the flowering bushes? Like, I see them. They can change colors if you add acid or acidic.
Hydrangea.
What about the hydrangeas and burning bushes? You don't do anything to them except cut the flower off when they're dead on the hydrangeas, correct?
Correct.
All right. And, we have burning bushes, which probably are out. I think they're outlawed now.
They're actually still regulated. They're not banned. They're regulated.
Okay. All right.
They are an invasive species. And if you go around some of the trails here around Skidmore,
you see some.
Oh my gosh, they are loaded, and that's part of the reason that we don't want them.
That's because the birds pick up and they drop them and they grow.
Correct.
One of the things about our bushes is that we got time. They have grown quite a bit, all right?
Yeah.
Even though we trim them. Do bushes like that seem to have the growth come outside more and the inside is more woody?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything you can do about that? Or when you're trimming, that's just a fact.
That's just the way it is.
All right.
Yep.
And because I know, like, on some evergreens do that, too. The outsides are beautiful, but when you get right into them...
Yeah, and then on your evergreens, you need to be very, very cautious. Because on a lot of our evergreens, if you cut too far back into that, you will not get any growth. You know, once you're into that wood that is really browned wood, you're not going to get growth. On some of our deciduous, you know, we can get some growth. There are some buds that are in there, and if they're allowed to have sunlight to them, they actually, you know, will trigger some growth into it. So we can fill in a little of the area, but it's really, it's just the nature of, you know, the plant, and it's not really going to be doing a lot.
If you turn them back too far, you got some problems.
Yes, you do.
You know.
So you got to be very, very cautious.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that spongy moth, a.k.a. gypsy moth.
Yes.
We had a terrible, terrible time with them this year.
Yeah.
And I heard that there's a three-year cycle, and that was only year two. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So we can look at the invasion this coming spring of being worse.
Probably the same. I don't think it's going to be worse, and it could be better for some areas.
Okay.
The areas that were really bad last year are probably going to see it less this year.
Well, they have
this coming
left
year.
There. They have
that's not true. But it's really funny because I was just looking through my pictures the other day, and I was looking at the pictures taken in my backyard on June 3rd, and I have it's all totally barren trees.
Yeah.
You know, because we were totally eaten away.
Oh, you got hit bad.
Oh, I mean, we were totally eaten away. You know, so so it's funny because I was just looking at those 2 days ago and thinking, oh, I really got to get these downloaded because I got to get these into a new, you know, brochure. But here we are, and it's just, the areas that were hit the year previously, I don't think are going to see it as bad as the areas that got hit the bad this year.
Okay.
And the reason is I think we finally have gotten our numbers where they need to be to build up those natural fungus and bacteria diseases that are there. So I think the population finally expanded to the point that we actually may see less of that in some of those areas. But some of the areas that this was their first year being really bad, they're definitely going to get hit next year.
They were awesome.
It really depends upon, you know, where you're at. So, you know, we're still going to have them. They're still going to be out there, but the population should start waning off.
Okay. I hope so, because they caused real bad problems for people.
Yeah.
They were all over sites of houses. They were on car tires, all over the cars, and they were a pest.
Yeah, I have some awesome pictures of them on car tires. Great pictures of them over the awning on the house.
You haven't got pictures.
I got
like
some good ones.
Because where, you know, the bus company is that I work for upstate on Geyser Road, which is right across, there's a bunch of trees where we parked the buses. And in every morning I had to wash my bus. A lot of them didn't. And they would come out of the holes in the tire caps. And they were all over the windows and the doors, and you had to get them off.
Yep.
But it was something. I tell you, I can't remember seeing it that bad myself. Of course, I may not have paid attention to it when I wasn't driving. But
this is the first, you know, last year's occurrence of them. Not, you know, the 2021 occurrence was the first year we had it that bad since 1982.
Okay. And I was only four years old in 82.
Yeah. you were. I wasn't 4 years old in 82, so.
Oh, dear me. I don't even
I was working for Extension in 82.
Anyway, getting back to Cooperative Extension, we have something. It's fall. We're at the end of September.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a holiday coming up, and it's called Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And the 4-H this year will be hosting the Halloween Extravaganza.
Yes.
Now, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
This is year two for us on
this
that.
This is year two. Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes. You know, so we have horse show. We have a variety of activities, a scarecrow making contest. It's, you know, it's just fun for all.
Yeah.
And it really is. Hay rides.
Petting zoo.
Yep.
And how about costume contest?
Oh, of course. Of course. Yes, we do.
Wow.
No.
Yes. You know, I'm always impressed by the 4-H kids because they seem to be, I don't know, hardy kids. They know a lot. They honestly, you go to a county fair, and they're pretty awesome kids.
They are. Really they are.
And very creative.
Absolutely.
Very creative, and it's just... I mean,
yeah, this should be a
nice.
Really fun event, yeah. You know. I mean, we have, and so hopefully we'll get lots and lots of folks coming out to it, because it should be lots of fun.
Do you have, I'm fixated on this, bobbing for apples.
Yeah.
And the only reason I say that, because that was a big thing when I was a kid.
I don't believe we do.
Don't. Why not?
I don't think
may
we
I
do
ask?
Have bobbing for apples.
Why not, may I ask?
I don't know. Yeah, no.
Something you want to think
of. Yeah, no. I'll have to ask those who are in charge of that event. I'm not in charge of that event,
right.
So.
I mean, drowning may be a problem.
Yeah, no.
I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know. With COVID, bobbing for apples is probably not a good thing.
Okay, maybe throwing.
I'm just saying.
Maybe
you know,
throwing apples. Get the kids lined up and throw apples. See if they catch them in their mouth.
Because sadly, COVID is not over. It's not.
No, it isn't.
It's not gone.
Yeah,
no. So I'm thinking we need to be a little cautious.
Yeah, it is sad that it's not over. But, you know, 4-H is also up to date in current things like robotics and...
yeah, our robotics team did awesome at national competition.
Are they highlighted also or no?
Yeah, I think they are, actually. I do think that they have an event that they're, you know, doing some stuff for us that day as well. So, I mean, it's just a fun-filled, you know, day. Come on out to the training center. It's really great. It's on, you know, Middle Line Road, 556 Middle Line Road. So come out and join us. You've got it in front of you there.
Boy,
I'm trying
Sunday.
To think which date it really happens to be.
On Sunday,
isn't it?
October 30th.
Yeah.
October 30th.
Yeah, it's on Sunday.
It's on a Sunday. See, I come prepared. So.
I know. See? Help me there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
no.
Cooperative Extension, before we turn it over to Homer, I want to say thank you.
Well, thank you.
And I want to say to people that the Cooperative Extension offices are located at 50 West High Street in Balsam Spa. Very easy to get to. Telephone number is 518-885-8995. And the web address is saratoga@cornell.edu.
Yeah, that's
and,
one of our addresses.
Okay.
You know.
Well, you want to give the other one?
Yeah, or you can just go to our website, which is ccesaratoga.org.
Okay.
And then you can click on anybody and directly email them. So that way you can directly email me rather than going to the generic site.
And please use the extension for lawns, gardens, shrubs. It's free. You get the best knowledgeable answers, and, you know, use it. It's there, and that's what they're there for, to help people.
Well, thank you, Rick.
We didn't get into agriculture.
We didn't, not today.
Next time we will.
We will.
So, hey, thanks for listening. We're going to turn it over now to the best music, and I say that with all honesty because I listen to his show. Best music in probably anywhere, of any station. So, Homer, good to see you.
Good to see you, Rick. Thank you so much. And Sue, boy, I'll tell you, a lot of great information there today. My head is spinning right now. And Rick, I hope you took good notes, because I'm going to be calling on you later in case I have any questions.
I won't be able to tell you any names. That's the only problem.
That's all right. I mean, it's still a lot of information. Thank goodness you record this. And if you didn't get anything, you can always call a Cooperative Extension, or you can listen on the Saratoga Broadcasting site to Talk Saratoga and replay it and over and over until you get everything down pat.
That's right.